Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On today's program, we have on the telephone with us Chris Jude, who is the head distiller at Fair Game Beverage Company in Pittsboro, North Carolina. As many of you know, in the viticulture industry, the distilling end, as well as the winery end of things, is an integral part of what we do here in the mountains and the Piedmont area of North Carolina. So, Chris, tell us about the history of your particular organization, Fair Game Beverage Company, where it came from, how it got started, and tell us a little bit about your background.
Fair Game Beverage Company got started just over 2.5 years ago, about 3 years ago, starting the planning of it. It was Andy Zeman of Benjamin Vineyards in Saxpaha and Lyle Estel of Piedmont Biofuels and Altador here in Pittsboro. They were talking about doing a distillery slash fortified winery. Andy had grown grapes and making wine in Saxpaha for about 14, 15 years and had always wanted to do a port, sherry, and different things like that using distilled spirits. So they brought me onto the team. I had actually had a background in biofuels, and I'd actually, as a student at Appalachian State, started learning about distilling and brewing, and you know, had always been really interested in that side of the craft. So they brought me on as the distiller, and Andy is our main winemaker. So he's coming up with a lot of the blends of the wines, and I'm doing the distilling and barrel aging and blending here on site.
So when did the distillery actually fire up for the first time, Chris?
Yeah, I spent about 6 to 8 months getting our facility ready and getting the permits submitted and all of that with the TTB, and we came online in January of 2014. We did our first bottling of our wines in June of 2014, and then we just released our first spirits in April of this year.
So you really are young, new kids on the block, so to speak, in the viticulture industry.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Andy's been around for quite a little while. He was probably one of the first 20 or so vineyards, I think, in the state. But, you know, since then, there's been a lot of growth.
Well, I know Andy Zeman pretty well. He's on the board of directors with me for the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association, and he's also our treasurer. We would talk to Andy about doing either some muscadine brandy or some muscadine grappa using the distillery side of things there. So that's how I know Andy. With the 8 to 6 months of preparation and getting your TTB licensing and all that kind of stuff, what were you actually doing during that 6 to 8 months?
I was, we're in a pretty interesting facility down here in Pittsboro. The origins of the building that we're in was actually, it was an alloys plant for military alloys, and it was abandoned maybe almost 15 years ago. And when we moved in, it was a pretty bare building that was in a lot of ways ideal for distilling because of the safety features inherent in the building. But I spent a lot of time, you know, cleaning it up, painting, prepping the floors, bringing in plumbing, installing a, you know, steam generator and all the various, you know, equipment and things that you would need to actually operate the winery and distillery, barrel racks and all of that. So a lot of time doing that, a little time doing, recipe development and finding our sources for a lot of our fruits and things like that, and, getting the permits in.
Okay. And so during this period of time, was there any thoughts at all about doing the wine part of it?
Well, you know, the plan was and has worked out pretty much that up in Saxpaha at Andy's winery, he's doing the grape blends. So he had his ideas of a port-style wine and a sherry-style wine and a scuppernong fortified wine. And then down here at the distillery, I've been doing all of my liquor mash. I also do our apple wine, apple brandy, and our peach wine here on site.
Okay. And if you were to take a look at your facility right now, I'm assuming that from what you say, there's no vineyards around you.
I planted, we're an interesting winery slash distillery here. Well, the fact that we are both a winery and distillery, we're one of just two active distillery slash wineries in the state. And A lot of what we're doing is fruit wine, so I have planted a small orchard of apple, heritage southern apples. But besides that, yeah, we are not on a vineyard. Our grapes are coming from about 50 miles up the road in Saxbaugh.
Okay, and I've been up to Andy's place a couple times over the years, and I watched him go through some machinations and stuff, and I remember when he was making the decision to get out of the winemaking end of things and get into the distillery end of things because of the value-added proposition that goes with that. So I'm sort of familiar with the front end of it. I've never been to the facility where you are now. Can you give us sort of an overview, is it a half an acre, an acre, how many square feet is it?
Yeah, we're in a pretty unique little, we call it an eco-industrial business park. So it was, like I said, originally it was built in the 80s to do these military alloys, and it was abandoned in the mid-90s, sat empty for about 10 years, and now there's about 14 acres inside of the fence here, and we're kind of in the woods just outside of downtown Pittsburgh. And there are about 10 businesses flourishing in the park. There's a biodiesel plant, Piedmont Biofuels. There's a nonprofit that's very active in local foods and renewable energy. There's an organic farm that surrounds our property. We've got a really neat kind of outdoor stage area, and our building itself is, there's four buildings inside, and we're one building about 2,000 square feet, big, large concrete building. I've got my still at the opposite end, my office down here, and a few rooms of barrels aging and a fermentation room, and then just general kind of storage room for all the bottles and equipment and everything like that.
Well, sounds like you have a nice cozy little operation there, and totally fenced in, it sounds like.
Yeah, we're kind of in this neat little complex. It's a fun spot. We've got our tasting room just across the street, and outdoor patio seating, and we have a grassy area to hold concerts and things like that in the summer. So it's a fun little place to come down and visit.
Chris, tell me a little bit about your background from whatever work you were doing at the App State and on the biofuels. Where did you go to school? Where did you get interested in working with the distillery end of things?
Yeah, originally I was, I think I've been really interested in production-oriented, like, crafts for quite a while. People that like to, let's say, like, make a cocktail or something, but what I'm really drawn to is, like, how do you make the actual base product? And so back in college at App State, I moved from out west to Boone to do the renewable energy program there, and I was doing biodiesel fuel and biofuels, and spent about, 3 or 4 years there doing that, and at the same time started brewing. Actually, we'd go down to Asheville Brewing Company down near you and, pick up beer kits, and really got interested in that. And, being up in the mountains, distilling was something that you knew was always kind of around, and it was very interesting and a little bit a part of the biofuels world. So I kind of got experience, both from the educational side as well as kind of, looking or poking around in the mountains up there.
Well, distilling certainly is a customary family event here in the mountains of Madison County, for sure. We've had some infamous people who've come out of this region, have been in the headlines in recent years about the last of the big moonshiners and so forth. I think popcorn was probably the last one that I recall just a few years ago.
It's an old tradition up there in the mountains. I actually just was doing a talk on this last week at Terra Vita, but, traditionally, folks were growing, there's so many apple trees up there, and they weren't up there just for the healthy apples. People were using that as a way to make some brandy, to be able to barter and trade and have something that was shelf stable that they could ship down out of the mountains. And so I'm really attracted to that kind of self-sufficiency that y'all have got, kind of inherent in the heritage of the mountain lifestyle. And one of the things that really got me into distilling was I started harvesting sorghum for sorghum molasses, and just spent last weekend doing our sorghum cooking. It was our sixth sorghum cooking, and that was actually, not on the wine side of things, but here at our distillery we do a sorghum molasses rum, and that comes a lot from this, influence of being up there in the mountains making sorghum molasses.
Sure. We still have some guys here with sorghum trays where they're actually cooking with the wood fire and boiling it down. And one guy I saw up here about two summers ago, we bought some of his, and was actually using a horse on the crushing head where you actually feed the stalks of sorghum into this little crusher.
Yeah.
And the juice ran about 30, 40 feet downhill to the to the place where they were boiling in town.
The cooking pan. Yeah, you know, we've been doing that up down here for about 5 or 6 years now, me and some other, you know, younger folks. Most of the sorghum cookers I know are, you know, at least twice my age. But, you know, we do everything pretty much in that same way that it was done 100 years ago, although we use a tractor to power our mill instead of a horse.
Well, that's modern days for you, I guess.
Yeah.
Chris, it sounds like you've got an interesting place there that I definitely am going to put on my to-visit list in not too distant future. I hope to be able to stop by Pittsburgh and to personally meet you and check out some of the goods you have there.
Yeah, I'd love to have you.
Tell me a little bit about the kinds of problems that you ran into in starting up such a facility, because we have a number of people here who are thinking about doing something similar, and it's always fun for vineyard owner wannabes to hear from the vineyard owners what kind of things they did right and what kind of things they could have done better in the process. So tell us about your distillery. What did you do right, and what would you do differently if you had to do it again?
How much time do we have?
Go for it.
There have been a lot of things have gone really well for us. I think we may have been a little bit ambitious in what the market would take, and we're doing something really different with our fortified wines. And so fortified wines have a really long history, tradition, you know, in Europe and such, and even in America. But, you know, in the last 30 years, folks have really fallen away from, or maybe not 30 years, more like 40 or 50 years, have fallen away from things like vermouths and things like that, and they're just starting to come back to them. So we're really doing a lot of education with the products that we have. We spend a lot of time going out and doing sales and sales calls, and we find that it takes, you know, a few visits to a restaurant or to a bar or to a wine shop before, you know, you end up actually getting on the shelf and starting to move product. On the permitting side of things, you know, we have a pretty unique, neat ownership structure where it's a lot of small investors involved in the business, which is wonderful. We've got a lot of great folks who are enthusiastic about, you know, ownership of this business, but at the same time, it makes it very cumbersome to make changes with the, you know, federal licenses and permits and all of that. So that kind of takes a little more time than you might have thought it would. Dealing with TTB and the state ABCs. Also, you know, since we're a fortified winery and a distillery, here in North Carolina, there's a lot of restrictions that are not the same as a brewery or a winery. So there's a lot of places where we can't sell, and there's a lot of festivals and things like that we can't, you know, pour at because we're pouring a fortified wine or a distilled spirit. We've actually brought the alcohol content down on a lot of our wines, just below that 16% threshold, so it's considered an unfortified wine, and that allows us to sell, you know, more at grocery stores and poor tastings and things like that, because being above that 16% really limits you in where you can actually get out there and sample your product in front of the public.
What's the restriction regulation?
So on the federal level, it's not a big deal. Fortified, unfortified, it doesn't really matter. The taxes are slightly different. But on the state level here in North Carolina, unfortified wine and breweries can apply for an annual permit, and they can pour at farmers markets or grocery stores or any kind of places like that. Whereas a fortified wine or a distilled spirit, a fortified wine above 16%, up to 24%, you can only pour at places that have a fortified wine on-premise permit, which a lot of wine shops don't have, and of course you can't be at a farmer's market or a lot of the wine festivals. So it just precludes you from being able to taste your product with the public, and that's a problem for a young company. So we've adjusted our alcohol content to be able to fit in with the North Carolina rules.
Explain to the radio audience what the problem might be with trying to sell directly to a restaurant or a grocery store. Is that something that your permits allow you to do?
Oh yeah, we can certainly sell directly to restaurants and grocery stores. You know, we're, you know, both wholesalers and retailers at our tasting room. And that is, you know, that has not been a problem. We're actually in quite a, you know, I think we're doing really well for a North Carolina winery, actually getting into some very, you know, popular restaurants up in Asheville and down here in the Triangle and, you know, Wilmington and Greensboro, Boone. So we've actually done pretty well with that. It's more the ability of the way the North Carolina rules are written, it's very difficult to sample a fortified wine above 16% or a liquor at a farmer's market or something, a wine festival, a beer festival, that kind of thing.
So if you're doing something like an 80 proof grappa or something like that, you really can't do any tastings anyplace, right? Unless they have a specific tasting license?
Yeah, they've actually just this month, they've released, loosened it slightly so that I can taste in my tasting room, and I've been able to do that with the grappas or brandies, things like that. But to actually go to a trade show or a wine festival, you cannot taste those legally without a... I think now they may have created a one-time permit, but it requires a $50 fee and a background check for every single time that you do them. It's quite onerous of a restriction.
Yeah, we had something like that similar in Arizona. I spent 18 years out there in the viticulture industry, and I used to teach a lot of classes in it, including some of the regulations there. And it did make a big difference as to how much alcohol you had in the particular substance that you were tasting, as to where you could do it and how often you could do it. But they did have this one-time $50 license that we used on several occasions for different events there, and it worked out just great. A little bit of a headache, but not so bad. I don't know how it is here because I've never done one here in North Carolina.
Up until this last month, it was impossible to taste spirits or fortified wines, but I think now they have made that $50 permit. But it's a per-use permit, so it's if you want to be out there tasting as often as possible.
Chris, appreciate your time so far on this. We're going to take a break at this point. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back. Our sponsor for this week's program is Beulah's Bumbleberry Pie. Beulah has revived an old country favorite from her grandma and made it into a delicious product. Sales of her bumbleberry pie helps her small farmstead's income. She collects a bit of sang every year along with some bloodroot and golden seal and makes a number of home remedies, including black salve. But when she found some of her grandma's bumbleberry seeds in the old root cellar, she hit upon the idea of making her favorite childhood dessert for sale. Beulah carefully plants the bumbleberry seeds along the rain gutters, which are full of composted sycamore leaves and windblown dirt from the mountains. Then she fertilizes them with her secret blend of herbs and raccoon droppings from behind the outhouse. When the bumbleberries are ripe, she harvests them by swishing an old leaf rake along the gutters. The berries fall into her apron, which saves them from being bruised. She carefully washes them in spring water, soaks them overnight in a mixture of sorghum, molasses, and moonshine, and then bakes them into a yummy pie. Finally, Beulah carefully wraps each pie with old-fashioned wax paper dusted with white mushroom powder to keep the pie fresh and preserved. Your mouth will go wild when you taste it. Beulah's Bumbleberry Pie is another specialty product made in the good old USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Beulah's Bumbleberry Pie today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program. Welcome back, everybody. We've been interviewing on the phone today Chris Jude, who is the head distiller at Fair Game Beverage Company in Pittsboro, North Carolina. Chris has been sharing with us some of the things that they've been doing there, a little bit of history about where they came from, what they're doing now. Let's jump back into this, Chris, and tell us about the wine that won the gold medal at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival this year here in Asheville. I think the name of the wine was Ferris, F-E-R-R-I-S, wine.
That's right, yeah. The Ferris is kind of our flagship. It's a port-style red. We think of it as a ruby-style port. It's a blend of Chamberson and Norton along with Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot, and then we blend in a little bit of Tarrega, which is a traditional Portuguese port grape. And all of the grapes are grown in North Carolina, except the Tarrega is, we're bringing that in from California, to give it a little more of that, you know, nice port body and flavor. It's a really nice, we had been doing it as an 18% wine, and this new release is about 15.5%, but it's a great dessert wine, but it's light enough that it's able to be done as a table wine as well. It's got a just great body to it, and works really nice with meat dishes or, you know, of course, as a dessert wine.
Do you make other wines there?
Yeah, we do we have a two-step, which is the sherry style white. That is a blend of Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and Palomino grapes. And Palomino, of course, is a traditional sherry style grape. And that one is aged about 13 months on bourbon oak and has a really nice Amontillado style sherry flavor to it, character to it. We also do three fruit wines, and we're about to release a fourth. We call these our tippers. We have an apple tipper, which is made with apples from up near y'all, up in Hendersonville. It's fortified with an apple brandy that I distill, and then aged in bourbon oak. It's a wonderful apple, 15.5% wine. It works really nicely as a dessert wine, but I often will make it into a spritzer or things like that. Super refreshing. We also do a Scuppernong, which has actually become one of my favorites, and that one won the silver medal at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival this fall.
Yep.
And that one is remarkable to me because we fortify it with a Scuppernong brandy. And, you know, there's a lot of folks here in North Carolina who love Scuppernong, and then there's a lot of folks who have approached that really just syrupy, sweet, overdone Scuppernong, and that's kind of what they're familiar with. And with ours, when it's fortified with that brandy, it just brings that really wonderful muscadine Scuppernong flavor right up to the front, and it cuts the sweetness down, and it just makes it's such a unique flavor. I love the muscadine and the Scuppernong, and I think if you can do that as a slightly drier wine and with a little more flavor intensity, it just really makes a remarkable, unique wine. And you know, we've had a lot of folks, a lot of bartenders and things like that, that have found that this is a great wine to blend with, and it's just, it's so unique in its character. And then we also do a peach tipper, which won the bronze at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival. And that's super refreshing, just not very sweet. Again, a lot of our wines, we get asked all the time, you know, at food festivals, you know, are these sweet wines? Because we're a North Carolina winery, and ours tend to be on the drier side, and I think folks really like that. They appreciate it. Our peach wine especially is on the drier side. It's got a nice acidity to it, got a great mouthfeel, and really just brings that, like, you know, summer peach flavor right up front. And we're about to be releasing a blackberry fortified muscadine wine with a blackberry-infused brandy. And up in Asheville, up in your area, we're in Asheville Wine Market. Right there in downtown. They're a wonderful wine shop. Definitely recommend going in there. Some very knowledgeable folks working in there. And so we hope to be doing some tastings in there this fall and winter. We're also Sovereign Remedies is an amazing bar right in downtown, as well as MG Road over on Wall Street. They're both have been doing cocktails with our Scuppernong wine, and they're using both of our spirits. So we've got some really nice attention up there in Asheville. For the wine and the spirits. The spirit end of things, we have two out right now through the ABC stores, and we are up in Buncombe County, Asheville ABCs, with our No Lasses, which I was talking about, our sorghum rum. And that's a rum made from sorghum molasses and sorghum juice rather than sugarcane. And that's actually kind of how I got into distilling, was growing sorghum, making molasses, and started realizing, hey, this is a lot like sugarcane. It's got its own flavor to it. What would this be like if I made a rum out of it? And we've been really excited about the results we've had from our sorghum molasses, which is aged in bourbon oak.
Did I understand that you call that molasses or no lasses?
No lasses, as in you can't have molasses if you ain't had no lasses yet. we actually ran into a lot of trouble with that one because being not a not made from sugarcane, we can't actually call it a rum. You know, sugarcane and sorghum cane are very similar plants. They're in the same family and they're processed in the same ways. But to make a rum, it must be from sugarcane. So we're making this No Lasses, and it's a wonderful product that's you know, very compatible in any sort of rum recipe. But we can't put the word rum on the label. So I think it's a fantastic product, but it definitely, folks need to kind of understand what it is and how they can use it. And we've got a lot of bartenders and stuff playing around with it, and we've been really happy with the results.
Can you say on the label rum style?
No, they're very particular. They're very protective of that rum designation, so they actually wouldn't even let me use the word cane.
Really?
I couldn't say sorghum cane, so that was a little frustrating. But, you know, we've had the Nolasses out for about 6 months through ABC, and I've seen some nice results from that, and we're in ABC stores across the state. So you can find it up in Asheville, down here in the Triangle, and down on the coast and all, you know, in between. We also do an apple brandy, which is made from the same apples as our apple tipper wine, and that one's been very popular. It's a delicious apple brandy. I make it a little bit more in the Calvados, you know, French apple brandy style than the American Applejack. It's aged on used bourbon oak, but it has a very nice apple aroma to it. Not a lot of oak, and just a really beautiful brandy. We've gotten some, actually, in the Asheville Wine and Food Festival, they had a cocktail competition, and out of 8 bartenders, 4 of them were using our apple brandy in their competition drinks. So we're pretty proud of that.
I guess that gives you a pretty good recommendation if you get the bartenders doing it. Okay, let's assume for the moment that people want to contact you. You've told us some of the places that we can find some of your products. How do we reach you? What's the best way to find out who you are, what you're doing, and how to get in contact with you?
Well, we've got our website, which is www.fairgamebeverage.com. And then we're very active on Facebook. You can search for us at Fair Game Beverage. We have a fun Instagram page, too, if you like looking at that. You can definitely find us there, and then we do Twitter as well. So any of those places are great ways to keep in touch with us. And you can always give us a call. Our number down here in the office is 919-245-5434, or you can email me. I'm chris@fairgamebeverage.com. And then we have our tasting room. It's open Thursday, Friday evenings, and then Saturday and Sunday afternoons up until the evening. And we always have some, wine on, pouring wines, doing wine tastings, doing spirit tastings. We actually have beer on draft as well. So then often doing special events here at the distillery on the weekend. So if you're in the Triangle area, then you can certainly come by and see our distillery, do a tour, try some wine, try some spirits. And actually, as of October 1st, you can actually buy a bottle of liquor on site here at the distillery. It's a brand new North Carolina law. First change to liquor sales in North Carolina since the end of Prohibition.
Wow. Something wonderful to look forward to. What's the actual address there, Chris?
We're at 193 Lorax Lane in Pittsburgh.
Okay, so somebody gets close by their car and they're touring out in that area. There's a sign, I assume, or some way to see where you are?
Yeah, if you're coming through Pittsburgh, we're just about a 3/4 mile past the courthouse. We're one of those towns down here in the Piedmont with a courthouse in the center of town and a roundabout, and we're just about a 3/4 mile on the east side of there towards Raleigh, just behind the State Employee Credit Union.
Fantastic. Chris, thank you very much for your time today. And for the radio audience who hasn't had the opportunity to stop by your place, I certainly hope you can do that over the next year or so and try some of the wonderful products that are manufactured down there at the distillery. We've been talking with Chris Jude, head distiller of Fair Game Beverage Company in Pittsburgh, North Carolina. Chris, thank you very much for your time today. We really sincerely appreciate it and wish you well with your endeavors there at your distillery.
Hey, thank you so much, Chuck. I had a great time.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!